KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, the Hollywood power couple behind the BET show The Game and the upcoming Whitney Houston movie Sparkle, plus the legacy of the movie Deliverance in the Georgia town where the film was shot. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my co-banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, the Oscar show. It's early yet, but not if you actually have to produce the thing. And it's been a perennial problem for some time now. How do you find a host who can really boost the ratings and make this thing work? Tom Sherrick, who is the outgoing president of the Academy, thought that he had an answer. He lined up Lorne Michaels. He lined up Jimmy Fallon. And then the trouble began.
Yeah, the trouble being Bob Iger, who heads ABC parent Disney. ABC shows the Oscars, and Bob Iger made it clear that he did not want the Oscar ceremony promoting the work of somebody who happens to be on NBC.
Yes, of course, Jimmy Fallon is an alum of Lorne Michaels' Saturday Night Live. He's also got his own late-night show. ABC has a late-night show, too, hosted by a different Jimmy, Jimmy Kimmel. He's not available because he's hosting the Emmys, so he's not going to also host the Oscars. But the outcome is that the Academy is left after, you know, the torture of last year. We all remember Brett Ratner was going to produce. Eddie Murphy was going to be the host. But Brett Ratner washed out. Eddie Murphy soon followed. This is a constant problem. And there was an attempt to make it work. And Bob Iger is sort of more fixated on the network against network competition, it seems, as opposed to what would work for the Academy in the film community. The Academy needs the Oscars to be the Oscars. To be this gigantic event program, and that is their primary consideration. It is their life's blood.
No, and the ratings have not been good, as you've said. They've been kind of flatlining or trending in some years downward. But the real issue is Bob Iger chairs the Academy's $250 million capital campaign to build a new museum. And I think even though he doesn't have veto power over who does and does not produce and host the Oscars, what he says really matters within the Academy offices. So we're off to a new search for a producer and a host.
Yeah, I assume it will not be easy. Meanwhile, NBC's programming, the Olympics, has been going on for some time now. And NBC has been trying to do what you would expect. NBC always in last place, trying to launch new fall shows on the strength of that big Olympic audience. The Olympics has, as we've talked about in the past, it's been working out really well for NBC in terms of viewers, despite all the complaining about their coverage. So we've seen things like this new Matthew Perry show go on, have these pseudo-premieres, sort of smack dab in the middle of Olympic programming.
Yeah, and don't forget Animal Practice, your favorite capuchin monkey show. We've talked a little bit about the economics of the Olympics, and basically it's a break-even business, which is a good outcome for NBC, who at one point thought they were going to lose $200 million on the broadcast. So they're using the Olympics to promote new shows. And this is a conundrum that NBC has been faced with because their primetime schedule is so soft. It's very hard to get people to show up for the first looks at some of these new shows. And Bob Greenblatt, who is the chairman of NBC Entertainment, said as much in a recent interview where he said, quote, given what's happened at the network over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of just the general decline across the whole week, we just can't get the biggest audience for those shows. He's talking about launching new shows. So NBC is trying to use the Olympics as a springboard. But of course, the quickest way to kill a bad show is get a lot of people to tune in the first week. And if audiences don't like either of these shows, they'll be gone pretty fast.
Yeah, so we'll see what kind of star the Monkey on the Vet show turns out to be. But the Olympics has produced another star who seems to be a bit of a monkey of a different kind. And that is one Ryan Lochte, who is a very good-looking swimmer. You might have heard of him. But he has actually inspired a website, Jezebel, to dub him the sexiest douchebag in America. He actually got that title with all sorts of behavior. He tried to wear this diamond-studded grill on his teeth. These things cost upward of $15,000 to his medal ceremony, one of his medal ceremonies. I don't think that was permitted. His mother suggested that he's a busy boy and he only has time for one-night stands. And then he admitted that he pees in the pool, which is not an image that, you know, necessarily seems like that wholesome to a lot of listeners, I'm sure. Nonetheless, Hollywood is interested.
But at least it's the warm-up pool. It's not the pool in which they actually race. So.
Yes, that is why it is so warm, John.
I'm not quite sure that there's a great precedent for this. I mean, I think about Bruce Jenner and his incredibly poor TV career. But again, I think athletes should be athletes. And if Ryan Lochte or Michael Phelps or any of these great Olympians wants to cash in on their fame, so be it.
Apparently, he's being courted for a couple of reality shows, according to his agent. And he's supposedly his dance card with endorsements is just about full. I'm going to quote a guy named Evan Morgenstern, who is has represented Olympians in the past. He said, a tight-ass Madison Avenue ad agency who has a client that is risk-averse, they weren't going to work with him anyway. So it might be that whether or not the reality show succeeds, Ryan Lochte has a future. He's moving to L.A., so we will find out.
I don't know that Lochte really needs the money. He's already cleared more than $2 million in endorsement deals. But if Lochte gets his own reality program, I'm going to campaign for one for Hope Solo, the goalie from the U.S. women's soccer team.
Good luck with that, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Coming up a little later in the show, the impact that the 1972 movie Deliverance had on the small town in Georgia where it was shot. But first, the Hollywood power couple behind the new Whitney Houston movie, Sparkle. Mara Brock Akil and Salim Akil are a Hollywood power couple, though their names aren't well known even among some industry insiders. Mara created the sitcom Girlfriends, inspired by her love of Sex and the City. The show started on UPN in 2000 and continued on its successor network, The CW, until 2008. Mara also created a spinoff, The Game, about women in relationships with pro football players. That show premiered on The CW in 2006.
Darwin had that baby by someone else, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to go there when your husband has three kids with the same birthday?
Oh, ladies. No, speed up this assembly line. Wine!
No, wine! No, I want focus. Okay, I mean, these lily pads, they have to be perfect for my wedding.
Ever since the Girlfriends days, Mara Brock Akil's husband, Salim, has been a regular director of his wife's shows. He also directed the successful 2011 feature, Jumping the Broom. Both Mara and Salim got their start in the TV business, working on shows aimed at African-American audiences. She on Moesha and the Jamie Foxx Show, and he on the Showtime series, Soul Food. I asked Mara and Salim if they felt that that was the way it needed to be if they were to establish themselves in the industry.
I didn't necessarily feel like that's the way it needs to be. I was actually grateful to be on shows and to still do shows, mainly about African Americans. Of course, that's my life experience. And like anyone else on television, I like to explore my life experience. I don't see it as, and I don't think most African American artists see doing shows or art about African Americans as something less than. I think maybe the industry sometimes does. We don't get as much attention. We don't get critical acclaim and so on and so forth. But as far from my perspective, I think it's a natural thing. And it doesn't limit me because all I'm really doing is telling American stories.
I know you, Mara, had done some stuff on Cougar Town.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that's something that you saw as going outside of the unit. I mean, you haven't even addressed what Salim just said. So I don't know if you have a different perception of the whole game from the point of view of being a black talent writer, you know, in this industry.
I would, one, agree with Salim that I do think a lot of writers are excited about writing shows that are about them. I think where the frustration would come is when you want to explore something else. for instance, you brought up Cougartown. What interests me about Cougartown was, although I write about the African-American experience, what I think I'm even better at is writing about the complexity of women. So Cougartown was interesting to me because of, you know, a recent divorcee, you know, character. And, you know, I really love Bill Lawrence's work. I would love to work with him. And, you know, so it was a great opportunity for me. I love Courtney Cox. So it was like, okay, this would be great. And it's really in my wheelhouse of about women, you know.
Right.
As far as Girlfriends is concerned, I was excited to pitch and sell Girlfriends because at the time Sex and the City was on the air and I was a huge fan of it. And I wanted to get in the conversation from my point of view.
Right, right.
And also to document in a sense that we're here and this is what we were thinking, this is what we were feeling during this time of what I would believe at least television was exploring a sort of deeper or layered experience of what women are thinking, you know. And I was excited to get in that conversation. And so to talk about it through four women and girlfriends, it was Christmas every day. You know, it was really great. I think Salim touched on this. I think some of the frustrations would be, I do believe those actresses should have been recognized more for their work.
I mean, like Emmy nominations and stuff
like
that. Oh, of
course. Mm-hmm. I really believe they were just as competitive of the women that have been noticed. Mm-hmm. And that can be frustrating.
Do you feel like women can write men can write women, you know, white can write black can write white, or is that?
I think that any artist that's connected to humanity can write whatever character they've fallen in love with.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I don't think that writing is necessarily has something to do with race. It has to do with creativity. Now, if you put it in the box of race, then in your mind it has to do with race. I think what sometimes we as Americans have to get out of the habit of is separating each other by gender, sexuality, race, because all
religion.
It does, religion, all it does is limit your thinking. It makes you feel comfortable, you know, to feel that you can explain things away by putting a label on it. But actually, we're just living together in America. So we're all basically Americans. And we have to get out of this habit of sort of putting each other in a box and get in the habit of sort of celebrating each other, not in the way of dismissing each other's differences, but in a way of appreciating that this is a fact that makes our country better. I mean, so you're asking me, do I think that different genders or races can write anything? And yeah, if you're connected to the character, if you're connected to the moment, then you should be able to write it.
I believe a lot of my success actually comes from having a diverse room. I've often had a very diverse room, a varied backgrounds.
You're talking about your writers, obviously.
Yes, I'm talking about my writers, excuse me. Yes. And it's funny because, you know, I often say to my other showrunners in the business, don't think of diversity as a kumbaya moment. Think about business. I mean, if you put my experience in the body of a white male, he might just be that more interesting.
I mean, do you think the industry is there? I mean, you feel, okay, I can write, you know, a lot of stuff. Does the industry agree?
Well, no. I don't think so. I mean, let's be honest. I think, you know, how many women are directing movies?
Not many.
You know, so I think that we have to stop pretending that people are getting it when just observation evidence tells you that we're not getting it. I think that we really do, you know, to keep it interesting and to keep developing TV and movies, I think we really do have to open up a bit. You know what I mean? It more shows from different perspectives.
Well, let me ask you, Mara. I think you are the only person I know who's come into as a producer or a writer who's a Muslim. And do you feel like people in the business have any kind of reaction to that? Do they know that you're Muslim? Do they care?
No, I don't know. I don't go around, I guess, in announcing it. So I guess if you have a conversation with me, if you know me, then you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody cares. I don't think so.
Like both of you and same thing?
Yeah. I mean, clearly, my name is Salim Akil. So, you know, I'm sure they must know something. I don't think most people care, to be honest with you. You know, it's funny. It's like any other religion. I guess if you're carrying a sign, then people notice.
Right.
I guess if you're just being yourself and treating people properly, they don't care what you are.
Yeah, and I find it very interesting. I think this industry is filled with many different religious backgrounds, and everyone, you know, you get along to get it done.
If you're just joining us, I'm Kim Masters, and we're talking with Mara Brock Akhil and Salim Akhil. She created the BET show The Game, a spinoff of her series Girlfriends, which ran first on UPN and then its successor network, The CW. Salim is a director and producer on the show. The Game ran for 3 seasons on The CW until it was canceled in 2010. But repeats of The Game performed so well on BET that programming chief Loretha Jones revived the series on her network. In 2011, 7.7 million people tuned in for the premiere, making it the most watched sitcom in basic cable history. Interpret that for me.
We are in a business. Art fuels the business, but it is a business. And I do believe a lot of the networks oftentimes, they do black shows to build their network, and then they abandon the black shows so that, you know, so that it can get more of a mainstream audience. So that UPN is no different than the WB, which is no different than Fox in my sort of career time. And even I remember when Cosby came back on the air, it revived television, it revived sitcoms, but it was on the back of a black man, you know. So here I had a show called Girlfriends on this network, you know, trying to build up the numbers. And so you go after a core group, you know, they think that you don't have to spend a lot of money. They don't believe you have to spend a lot of money on to get them to come because we're so hungry to see ourselves that we'll just show up and find it. That is not the case, by the way. Here we had a core, audience that was, you know, paying the bills over there. And so, okay, well, can we do it again and do it for great quality at a low cost? I mean, I often was told, David Staff used to tell me all the time.
David Staff being the...
Over CBS Paramount.
Right.
I don't know how you're doing it. It's like, you know, on the money we're
giving
you.
Like,
this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I know, so
maybe I should not do it.
So, no. I mean, I'm going to do my best all the time.
Right.
So that's, you know, I'm going to be that. And so, and I think that has benefited me a great deal. And I appreciate being on, I think Girlfriends was 172 episodes and... we had 3 seasons of the CW that I'm appreciative and happy to be able to express myself on the artist side of who I
right.
am. But you asked, how do you, then you go, then it gets, CW doesn't have a home for it. You take that knock and you keep moving. And I was glad that BET saw the value in what this was. I mean, Loretha Jones, the president of programming over BET, she saw value in the show as soon as she took over the job over there. And she was the one who got the reruns for BET. And actually, even before it launched, or relaunched, I should say, on BET, what was refreshing to me was that the Game reruns were beating first runs on CW. It feels
yeah.
good. It felt,
mm-hmm.
And to the sort of industry's credit, they started tracking that and talking about that, and it felt good. You know, it felt good. I think, you know, we certainly benefited with BET by when they saw value in what we had, and they marketed. They told people about it. Plus, we were at a time of social networking, so it was, you know, it was, the stars were aligned to help us in that area.
Coming up after a short break, the Akhils on working with Whitney Houston on their remake of the 1976 movie Sparkle. Plus, the legacy of Deliverance. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness.
Hi, this is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Thanks so much for listening. Our show costs money to make, and we're dependent on listeners like you to make it. KCRW is a nonprofit, listener-supported public radio station. Go to kcrw.com/join.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with Salim and Mara Brock Akhil. She's the creator of the successful shows Girlfriends and The Game. Salim is a director and producer on The Game, and he directed the new movie Sparkle, which opens August 17th. Mara wrote the screenplay. Sparkle is a remake of a 1976 movie starring Irene Cara that developed a cult following in the African-American community. Inspired by the Supremes, Sparkle tells the tale of sisters who form a girl group. The remake features Whitney Houston as their mother, a disillusioned former singer. A Sparkle remake had long been a passion project for Houston. After Sony Pictures acquired the rights from Warner Brothers, the studio asked Salim Akil to direct. He hesitated, but Sony executive Devon Franklin was insistent.
Black folk love that movie, and I didn't want to f*** it up.
Sacred text.
Yes. Yeah. And he was very convincing. So I said yes, and I had a few things that I wanted to do with the movie, and it was I wanted to do it in 1968, and I wanted the women to be empowered, and I wanted Mara to write it. He said yes, yes, and yes, and so it was very easy after that.
Obviously, Whitney Houston finished the film.
Yes.
And I had heard that, you know, when it's obvious and logical, that when she did pass away, all of a sudden everyone at the studio wanted to have a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd heard that you were very close to a cut that you liked, and suddenly you're getting notes from all over the place, including Man. The chairman's wife.
Wow, you have some deep sources there.
I just get lucky once in a while.
Yeah. You know, it's been a real journey for, I think, the filmmakers as well as the film. And I think ultimately, hopefully, what will happen is we'll come out with a version of the film that everybody can be happy with. Artists, directors have a point of view about how to tell stories, and executives do. And we get notes from all over. A lot of times, I don't really know where they're coming from. And I, to be honest with you, it doesn't matter. If it's a good note, it's a good note. If it's not, then it's not.
I don't want to be maudlin. It must have been a tremendous shock. I mean, obviously Whitney Houston had her struggles and it was secret to nobody, but to suddenly have her gone.
You know, I really don't know what the hell was going on with her. What I do know is that the time that I was with her, she was stellar. She was beautiful. She was supportive.
I heard she was very lovely on the set.
She was absolutely mm-hmm. just a person who, you know, you fell in love with, and I certainly fell in love with her. So that's the context in which I sort of approach who she is and who she was.
Mara, you have anything on this experience?
I was just so excited to have worked with her. The cast is amazing, and she is too. And I really wanted her to see her own performance because I think she would have been very proud.
Mara Brock-Akil is a writer, showrunner, producer. Salim Akil is a writer, director, producer. They're the married team behind the BET show, The Game, and the upcoming feature, Sparkle. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you for having us.
Really appreciate it.
When Hollywood shoots big movies in small towns, that can bring an infusion of money and provide jobs, not to mention excitement. And some movies in success attract tourists to the location where they were shot. The Santa Barbara wine country saw a huge influx of visitors after Sideways. But sometimes movies leave behind a more complicated legacy. Such a story comes to us from documentarian Corey Wells.
The folks in Rabun County, Georgia, put on the Chattooga River Festival this past June to encourage environmental stewardship of the river and promote tourism. But it wasn't the moonshine tasting or the hatchet throwing or all the Appalachian music that got me and my partner Kevin Walker on a plane to this lush, green, mountainous part of the state. It was deliverance. The movie was shot on and around the Chattooga 40 years ago this year, and it seemed like the anniversary would be a great hook for the festival. What Sarah Gillespie and the others who helped put the event together didn't count on was how it would split the community.
We had a commissioners meeting, Rabun County commissioners, and we were asking for the county's approval and just support for the festival. And there were a number of people there in opposition. And someone stood up and was very emotional, very real feelings, very emotional, and said that the movie had ruined her life.
We're not just talking about being teased relentlessly for being backwards, though there was plenty of that. I heard stories of people being passed up for jobs because they came from Rabun County. And those negative images have been reinforced by 40 years of deliverance jokes.
Folks around these parts call me the Colonel.
No, 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 no.
How many of you have seen the documentary Deliverance?
Squeal, piggy, squeal.
You got a pretty mouth.
You sure got a pretty mouth.
If there was anyone who'd have a bone to pick with Deliverance, we thought it would be the locals who were cast in the movie in unflattering roles, like Billy Redden, the strange, backwoods-looking boy who played dueling banjos with Ronnie Cox in the film.
God damn, I could play all day with that guy.
Talk about genetic deficiencies.
But Billy, who's 55 years old now and still lives and works in the area, says Deliverance was the best thing that ever happened to him.
I was young. I didn't know what was going on. All the thing I was worried about was my schoolwork, because I didn't want to fail. When they came, it kind of made us a little bit of money for the town.
Not just a little, actually. Before Deliverance came out, the number of people who visited the Chattooga was in the hundreds. Afterwards, it was in the tens of thousands. So many inexperienced rafters died on the river right after the movie came out in 1972 that they named the phenomenon the Deliverance Syndrome. Rafting is now a $20 million industry here, and tourism is the area's number one source of revenue. So you can understand why the organizers of the Chattooga River Festival decided to highlight the film. Heck, it's what got me and Kevin out from Los Angeles. But you can also understand the objections.
How you justifying making fun of a culture and a people and then saying it's okay because you're paying them.
Tammy Whitmire is the supervisor of elections and registration for Raven County. She's lived in the area since she was 9 and married a man whose family's been here for 15 generations. But she refused to support the Chattooga River Festival because of Deliverance.
You know, what is it worth to you? What is it worth my, you know, when I look at my family? You know, what is it worth? Is it worth a few dollars for people around the world to think that that's what we are here? No.
But like I said, it really isn't just a few dollars. Deliverance was nominated for 3 Oscars and was a huge commercial hit for Warner Brothers. And after it came out, then-Governor Jimmy Carter established a film commission in Georgia. Since then, the state's become one of the top 5 production destinations in the U.S. And it's not just movie money that's been drawn to this part of the state. It's people with money. These days, million-dollar vacation homes line the banks of the area's rivers. You can understand why city folk might want to have a place in these parts. The river is beautiful, unbelievably beautiful. A company called Southeastern Expeditions took us rafting down the Chattooga. And as we were floating by a lovely clearing under a canopy of trees, our guide pointed to the bank and said, "That's where the rape scene was filmed." And 40 years after Deliverance hit theaters, that's still the issue. Can this gorgeous river and the disturbing scenes that were filmed here ever be separated? Do they need to be? Sarah Gillespie.
Well, Deliverance is a significant part of our history, good or bad. It was filmed here. Of course, there is the Southern stereotypes depicted in the movie of mountain people, which is a negative stereotype, and it is our hope to bring people here to show them who we really are. I mean, stereotypes are stereotypes. They're in every single movie you'll ever see in your life.
For what it's worth, my partner Kevin and I found the stereotypes to be anything but true. We met so many great people in Raven County, especially Billy Redden, that banjo boy.
We're not a bad people up here. We're loving people. We get along with everybody. And like up here, we all get along together because we all know one another. Just a real peaceful town.
Corey Wells is at work on a documentary called The Deliverance of Raven County. You can see a teaser trailer and connect with her Kickstarter campaign on our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness. Our story was produced for radio by KCRW's Matt Holzman. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.